The Chiefs' schedule is absolutely loaded in the first month of the season. They play the Friday game in Brazil against the Chargers. They play a 3:25 game on Fox against the Eagles. On the road against the Giants, you're thinking, oh, it's the Giants. It's Sunday night football. And then they have a 3:25 game on CBS against the Baltimore Ravens. So the first month of the season, there is not a more public team than the Kansas City Chiefs. Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by their week four opponent, the Baltimore Ravens. Cordell Woodland joins us on the show. He is with 105.7, the Fan in Baltimore. Cordell, man, happy to have you pop back on again, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. Let's just start with this. Another year in which I'm assuming there were Super Bowl hope and aspirations for the Baltimore Ravens, and they just fell short. How are you guys sort of getting over what happened this season? Where are you guys at in that process?
It's kind of rinse and repeat, honestly, out here in Baltimore with this team. I mean, they've really, throughout Lamar's time here, I guess you could really go back to that 2019 year where he won unanimous MVP and the Ravens won, I think, 14 games and were the number one seed. Really, since then, it's been like every year the expectation is Super Bowl, and obviously they have no Super Bowls to this point in that span. They haven't even gotten to the game. So it's kind of that all over again, and especially now with them returning a lot of their offensive guys. The Ravens had statistically the best offense in football last year, and they're returning guys like Derrick Henry, who just got a nice extension the other day. Mark Andrews, who's in the last year of his deal. A lot of talk about maybe he being on the move this offseason. He stays put. Zay Flowers is back. Lamar seems to get better and better each year. So they're loaded with talent by all accounts. It seems like they had a really good draft. Health, of course, will be the big question mark. But, yeah, right now it's everybody's looking out here, at least, for the Ravens to hopefully make a Super Bowl push. So they have a tough schedule, but the Ravens always do a really good job of dominating the regular season. For them, it's all about January, and we'll see what type of team they are come that time.
I was just going to ask you about Mark Andrews. There's been a lot of news around him. He had to address a trade speculation. The general manager at times feels non-committal about Mark Andrews. Are you foreseeing that Mark Andrews is going to be on the Ravens week one?
Yeah, I think at this point that ship has kind of sailed in terms of him being traded. I think if anything was going to happen, it was going to happen around draft time, maybe a little before. But at this point, look, I look at this Ravens roster, and as much as I love Isaiah Likely, and I do, they're a better team with Mark Andrews on the roster. Now, I wouldn't be opposed to maybe Mark taking a little bit of a back seat to Isaiah Likely this year, because I do think the upside with Likely is there, and the Ravens are in a unique situation right now where their entire tight end room is entering this season on the last year of their deal. So they need to figure out what's going to happen with Isaiah Likely, what's going to happen with Charlie Kohler. I expect this to be the last year for Mark. But, yeah, I do expect him to be there week one, but it would not surprise me if Isaiah Likely is more of the featured tight end for them this year.
Right now, we're talking to Cordell Woodland, taking a closer look at the Baltimore Ravens. They're the week four opponent for the Kansas City Chiefs, a 3:25 game on CBS. You know that all eyes are going to be on that matchup with two of the better quarterbacks and two of the better teams in the NFL. Where do you think that Baltimore is improved the most from last season if you were going through all of their offseason moves?
I think definitely defensively. I mean, defense was a big topic of conversation for them going into this offseason, because they got off to such a slow start last year. They were one of the worst defenses in the league for almost half the season, and it definitely turned around in large part due to them moving Kyle Hamilton from that Swiss Army knife role where they move him up in the box, sometimes play him back in, sometimes he's in a slot, sometimes he's a blitzer, to pretty much almost exclusively being a deep safety, which he was great at. He really helped stabilize their defense. But they know they're at their best when they can move him around all over the place. So they use their first-round pick on Malachi Stark, safety out of Georgia, who can do a lot of the same things that Kyle Hamilton can do. So that was a huge win, because by drafting Starks, it immediately impacts your best player in Kyle Hamilton to do the things you like to do with him. They also used, I believe, their second-round pick on Mike Green, who led the nation in sacks this year with 17 out in Marshall. So they feel really good about him, and that was a big part of it as well. The Ravens were second as a team last year, but they weren't great at getting those situational sacks, third down sacks, late game sacks, and they lacked turnovers too, which of course getting pressure on the quarterback ties into that. So I think they address some of those needs. Ardarius Washington tearing his Achilles the other day is a huge blow to this defense, because even with Malachi Starks being brought in, Ardarius was going to be a big part of what they like to do. So I am curious to see how they bounce back from that. But I think that defensively is where they made the most progress this offseason.
You mentioned Malachi Starks. He was one of those draft picks, and I said it whenever it happened. You just know that's going to work. Like, we've seen the Ravens draft these kinds of players. I felt that way about Kyle Hamilton. Patrick Queen was another one of those players. Like, the Ravens certainly look for a certain type of player, and I think Starks fits a lot of the things that that defense potentially needs.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it gives. We're in this phase now, especially here in Baltimore, where they like to play a lot of positionless football. So, you know, getting two guys like Starks and Hamilton that can move all over the place. And, I mean, you watch Starks' college film. He is very comfortable with playing all over the field. He looks like a natural slot corner, honestly, watching some of this film in Georgia. So that's the good thing about him compared to Kyle, who Kyle is at the top of his game. I honestly think Kyle is, if not the best safety in the league, one of the top two to three safeties in all of football. But with Kyle, his rookie year, it took about a month or two before the Ravens felt comfortable to start moving him around and utilizing him the way that they like to do. Whereas with Starks, I think he's ready day one to kind of do some of that stuff. Now, look, he's a rookie. There will be some growing pains, and you got to leave some room for that. But I just talking to some of the guys in the Ravens organization and some of their scouts, they feel really good about kind of putting Malachi Starks in the deep end of the pool early in his career.
Cordell, I'm going to ask you this question. I don't want it to sound like hate because I'm in Kansas City, but it's an honest question. How many more chances do you think the Ravens have? Because you and I both know you don't get an infinite amount of swings to try to win the Super Bowl. The Ravens feel like they have been knocking on the door. The Bills feel like they have been knocking on the door, but neither one of those teams have been unable to walk through. Do you still feel like the window is wide open for Baltimore? How many chances do you think they have in overtaking Kansas City and winning the AFC?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think definitely this year, I think their window is definitely wide open. I think, you know, they're returning all of their core guys, and they added to that, really. So I think this team this year is going to be better than the team they had last year. So, yeah, I do think this year is wide open. Beyond that, look, we'll see. I mean, as long as Lamar Jackson is there and healthy, it's a quarterback-driven league. So as long as he's there and able to play and is playing at the top of his game, they'll always have a chance. I mean, they have been – 2019, they won 14 games with, I mean, lackluster talent around Lamar Jackson, and he went on to win unanimous MVP, and they were the best team in the league, at least during the regular season. So he has shown the ability to – not only elevate the players around him, but also, you know, have a great year when you do put a lot of talent around him. So as long as he's there, they'll always have a chance. But it's the NFL. Injuries happen. We've seen the Ravens have some crazy years where they've been ravaged with injuries. So you just never know how often that's going to creep up and teams get better. There are always surprise teams. I'm a Commanders fan. I mean, they were in the NFC Championship game last year. Nobody thought that was happening, even as good as Jaden was. So, you know, I think the Ravens' window will be open, but how long will some of these guys be able to be a part of this ride? Like John Harbaugh, like how many bites of the apple will he get? I don't know. He got the 2-year extension this year, but I think this is going to be a pivotal year for John to at least get this team back to the AFC Championship game.
Cordell, last thing here. You know we appreciate your time. The first part of it is, who else do you see as a contender in the division? It's a very weird division, a competitive division nonetheless, but a very weird division. We don't know who the Steelers quarterback is going to be this year. The Browns appear to be going through their issues. The Bengals have been hurt and banged up these last couple of years and missed the postseason. And I think you and I agree. The top three in the AFC is Kansas City, Baltimore, and Buffalo. Do you see any other team in the AFC that is even worthy of putting in that conversation with those first three teams?
Well, with the division, I mean, right now, Baltimore and Cincinnati, it's a two-team race in my mind. I mean, I just can't get myself to really care about the Browns. They're just a mess right now, and they're going to be a mess for the foreseeable future. The Steelers, I actually like a lot of the things that the Steelers did this offseason, but they don't have a quarterback. And you just can't win in this league without a quarterback. You just can't. And so until they fix that, I can't take Pittsburgh seriously. If they get Aaron Rodgers, and I don't think Aaron Rodgers is, you know, really changing the fortune of a franchise right now, but you could get me to buy an Aaron Rodgers-led Pittsburgh Steelers team over and a Russell Wilson-led Pittsburgh Steelers team. I'll say that. In terms of the conference, yeah, I mean, I can't really right now put anybody in that tier one of the AFC with Baltimore, Kansas City, and Buffalo. I mean, I guess you could look at Cincinnati as if they're healthy, maybe them going in there. But outside of that, I think Miami is trending in the worst direction right now. I think they're going backwards. The Chargers won 11 games last year, but I don't really look at the Chargers as a tier one team. Same with Denver, who was a playoff team, had a really good year with a rookie quarterback themselves. But I don't see them in the same echelon as those top three. The only team that I would feel like I can give consideration to right now is Cincinnati. But I got to see it with them. I don't think they did enough defensively. And right now their best defensive player is talking about he's not even playing on this current contract. So they've got some issues to figure out. But if they can figure that out and get their defense to be reasonably good with that offense, I mean, they can compete with anybody.
That was Cordell Woodland joining us on the show today with 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore, taking a closer look at the Week 4 opponent for the Kansas City Chiefs. Sunday, September 28th at Arrowhead, the Chiefs play the Ravens at a 3:25 game on CBS. I'm assuming that game is going to do a big number. You got two of the better teams and two of the better quarterbacks, and certainly two franchises with history going up against each other. Coming up at the top of the next segment, we are going to head to Jacksonville for the Chiefs, their first Monday night football game of the year. Cordell, great stuff as always, man. I appreciate your time. Look forward to catching up with you down the road.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. That is Cordell Woodland joining us on the show today to take a closer look at the Ravens. If you are just tuning in today, we are going to be joined by somebody that covers every team that the Chiefs have on their schedule. We have now wrapped up the first month of the Chiefs season. They play the Chargers week one in Brazil. They play the Eagles in the home opener on the road against the Giants on Sunday Night Football, and also a 3:25 game on September 28th against the Baltimore Ravens. We will head to October and get to week five of the NFL season as the Chiefs go on the road and play Jacksonville. A lot of changes with the Jaguars. We'll learn more about them next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
You are listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. Coming up in about 10 minutes or so, we are going to head to Detroit, Michigan for the Chiefs Week 6 matchup against the Lions. That game is on Sunday Night Football. Well, you know what? There is going to be a week this year that you get the chance to watch the Chiefs play on Monday Night Football and also play on Sunday Night Football, October 6th. For the Monday night game in Jacksonville, October 12th, they play the Lions at home for Sunday Night Football. Let's cover both of them in this. We are going through every team that the Chiefs play on their schedule this season. We are at week five. Let's head to Jacksonville right now to be joined by friend of the show, Ryan Green with 1010XL down in Jacksonville. Ryan, happy to have you join us again today, my man.
Carrington, how are you, buddy?
Doing fantastic. Let's start with this. Where are fans, where is the media at with Trevor Lawrence? He certainly had a lot of hype, a lot of buzz coming into his career. He certainly has had some bright spots, but I don't think his career has gone the way that people expected it to go. Where are people at with the Jaguars quarterback?
Well, there's certainly questions about him coming into year five. I won't debate that, but people are still high on him. I think a lot of people are just hopeful now that there's some stability. I mean, if you go back to his final year, Carrington, at Clemson, you're talking about four head coaches in his last 6 years of football, four offensive coordinators in his last 6 years of football. I mean, that's a bad hand to be dealt for anybody. So now with Liam Cohen, the first young offensive mind that Trevor's had as his head coach in the NFL, Grant Yudinski, the youngest offensive coordinator in the game, innovative ideas. There's a lot of hope here that finally, coming into year five for Trevor, they're going to really be able to see his potential.
Right now, we're talking to Ryan Green, who covers the Jacksonville Jaguars, just going through their team, learning a little bit more about them this year. Where would you have Trevor Lawrence ranked? We talk a lot about top five. I don't think that Lawrence is there. Do you think he's a top 10 quarterback, maybe somewhere in that 8 to 10 range? Is he a top 12 quarterback? Where do you kind of project him? Where do you think he lands in the quarterback hierarchy?
No, I'm more realistic. I think some Jaguar fans would argue top 10. I will not. I say he's in the top half. I mean, I don't know if you can tell me 16 other quarterbacks that you would rather have than Trevor Lawrence. You could probably get to 10. You could probably get to 12. So I'll say he's somewhere in the top 16 of quarterbacks in the league. And look, I mean, there have, like you said, there have been a lot of bright spots. There have been some issues. There have been some injury concerns. There's been kind of everything. When Trevor's been good, he's been really good. It's just been few and far between. But I'll say he's in the top half of quarterbacks in the league, at least as we enter 2025.
I look at Jacksonville's offseason plan. It's a lot like what we saw in Chicago. Now, I get it. One is Chicago, one is Jacksonville, a much bigger media market in one situation than the other one. But if you think about it, you got a talented young quarterback. You're trying to get him back on track. You go get the offensive-minded head coach. You go get him a massive weapon in the offseason. I think there's a lot of similarities. Let's talk about the head coach. You guys go get the offensive coordinator for Tampa Bay. That feels like the right move for where Trevor Lawrence is in his career.
Yeah, I agree. You look at what Liam Cohen did with Baker Mayfield last year in Tampa. Baker had the best year of his career, and it wasn't even close. And we're hoping that lightning strikes twice. You know, a number one overall pick in Baker Mayfield that some were ready to send out to pasture. Obviously, he's had a revolution to his career in Tampa. Trevor Lawrence, a number one pick that a lot of people, again, are wanting to send out to pasture. We're hoping Liam Cohen can come in here and do the same thing with Trevor that he did with Baker Mayfield. And then obviously there's the Travis Hunter factor, the Brian Thomas Jr. factor. There are a lot of weapons that Trevor will have at his disposal this year.
Right now, we're taking a closer look at the Jacksonville Jaguars. Let's talk about their big addition this offseason. They have added Travis Hunter, the number two overall pick from Colorado. Is the plan to use him as a wide receiver that plays corner or a corner that plays wide receiver?
The plan coming in is he is going to be a wide receiver that is going to play corner. I think he is going to be a primary wide receiver along with Brian Thomas Jr. But Carrington, make no mistake about it, man, he is going to play defensive back as well. Does that mean 15 snaps a game? Does that mean 25 snaps a game? I don't know. I don't really know if anybody knows this early in the process. But he's going to play on both sides of the ball. But I think he is, if you're going to label him as something, he is going to be a wide receiver that is also going to play defensive back.
I actually think that's probably the right way to use him. I mean, I'm looking at supply and demand, and there's certainly fewer great corners in the league than great wide receivers. But I also think that he's a guy, if he primarily focused on either one of the sides of the ball, I think he could be an 1,100-yard receiver. I also think he could maybe be the best corner in the National Football League. It certainly makes sense to me with Trevor Lawrence also going out to get the offensive-minded head coach. It makes a lot of sense to use him primarily on that side of the ball.
Well, and the idea of him on one side and Brian Thomas Jr. on the other with Trevor Lawrence, you know, they went and got Deami Brown in the offseason, who had a really good playoff run with Washington. He's going to kind of be the third wide receiver. They really like Brenton Strange at tight end, which is why they let Evan Engram go, who ultimately signed with Denver. And remember, you still have Travis Etienne. You still have Tank Bigsby. They drafted the fastest running back in the draft in Bashel Tootin out of Virginia Tech. Speed, speed, and more speed is what the Jaguars have on offense, which is what Liam Cohen likes. And I'll give general manager James Gladstone credit. At only 34 years of age, he has come in here this offseason and really turned this roster upside down, which was needed based on, obviously, the last couple of years here in Jacksonville.
Ryan, we have to talk about the trade that sent Travis Hunter to Jacksonville. It's funny because, I mean, the number two overall pick was traded in this year's draft class, and it doesn't even feel like it was one of the five biggest stories surrounding the draft. They gave up a lot to go get Travis Hunter. What do you make of the trade, and what does he need to do to justify giving up that level of compensation to go get him?
No, I love the trade, and I understand why people think it was a lot. But Carrington, a lot of that hay is in the barn. I mean, the Browns used the 36th overall pick on Junkins, the running back from Ohio State. Interestingly enough, the Browns gave Jacksonville a fourth and a sixth round pick in that trade. Jacksonville's fourth round pick actually got improved by some 20 spots, so I don't even really count that. I count the second round pick this year and the first round pick next year. Look, here's the bottom line. If the Jaguars are bad, and if they're picking in the top 10, Cleveland wins the trade. Jacksonville doesn't think they're going to be bad. They think they're going to be competing for a wild card spot. Around a 500 mark is kind of the floor of this team. They don't think they were as bad as 4-13 last year. A lot of injuries happen. So if Jacksonville's right and they're an 8-9, dare I say a 10-win team, and that pick is in the 20s next year, I think Jacksonville clearly won the trade. So we'll find out soon enough once the season gets here. But I love what Jacksonville did. And quite frankly, I don't think they gave away too much in that deal.
Ryan, I feel like you have to consider the Texans to be the favorite in the AFC South. But if there is another team that I think could win the division, I would pick Jacksonville. How do you handicap the AFC South? And right now, if you want to bet on the over-under, it is at 7.5 right now for Jacksonville. Are you taking the over or the under for them?
Yeah, I'm going to do this on my show later. I have the Jaguars at 9-8 right now. I do have them losing to Kansas City, just to avoid any controversy out there with your audience. I have the Chiefs coming in here and winning on Monday Night Football. No, the AFC South is terrible. I mean, Tennessee is awful. We'll see about Cam Ward, but he's a rookie quarterback, and they didn't really do a lot to surround him with a lot of talent this offseason, the skill positions. Indianapolis has a good roster, but they have a major quarterback controversy on their hands with Daniel Jones versus Anthony Richardson. And Houston, I guess they're the favorite, but they have decided to take a bad offensive line and arguably make it worse. I mean, they replaced Laremy Tunsil at left tackle with Cam Robinson. I mean, that is the Texans' offseason in a nutshell. So I get C.J. Stroud, and that's great, and Nico Collins, and aging Joe Mixon. If C.J. Stroud's on the ground a lot, I don't know how good he's going to be. So I question what the Texans did. By default, I guess, I'm going to have them winning the division. But absolutely, I think any team could win this division, and it would not shock me at all if Jacksonville is that team.
That is Ryan Green with 1010 XL in Jacksonville. A busy week for Kansas City. On Monday, October 6th, they play on the road on Monday Night Football against Jacksonville, and then they host Sunday Night Football against the Detroit Lions. Ryan, great stuff, man. I appreciate your time.
Hey, Carrington, anytime, buddy. Take care.
Absolutely. That is Ryan Green joining us on the show today. That was Monday Night Football. Let's get to Sunday Night Football. Let's head to Detroit right now to be joined by John Jansen. He is with 97.1 The Ticket in Detroit. John, happy to have you join us on the show today. They have had a lot of changes in Detroit. The offensive coordinator is gone from last year. The defensive coordinator is gone from last year. What other changes have we seen with the Lions?
Well, I mean, obviously the coordinators, both of those gone, and it'll take an adjustment. We saw the Philly do this a couple of years ago where both coordinators end up getting head jobs. They bring in a couple of guys, didn't work originally there. Again, they swapped them out. Then they obviously won the Super Bowl, which I know you guys are well aware of. Sorry to bring that up. But that's – hopefully we're going to skip that gap here where, you know, John Morton – I know he's familiar with KC, having some time in Denver. He was with the Lions a couple of years ago, so hopefully he hits the ground running with a good rhythm for Jared Goff. Same thing with Calvin Shepard, linebacker's coach, now DC. He's very familiar with the roster, but when you look at the defensive line, Aleem McNeil probably won't be available for that game. He is a big-time player for this team. And Levi Onwuzurike, his replacement, is going to have a big season. He's going to have an opportunity. He signed a one-year deal, re-upped here in Detroit. So a lot of eyes on him, a lot of eyes on the end opposite Aiden Hutchinson. Hutch will be back from that injury, so that'd be a little bit different from last year. Only played five games, but you know, when you've got Marcus Davenport, Josh Pascal, and a whole bunch of other guys that no one knows about rushing the passer against opposite Aiden Hutchinson, that's going to be something. And then offensively, most of the offense remains the same. Receivers are back, running backs are back, quarterback is back, tight ends are back, but there's some changes up front. With, you know, with Kevin Zeitler no longer being that right guard. They drafted Tate Ratledge out of Georgia in the second round. Looks like he's going to be the starter up front. Christian Mahogany, who they took last year from Boston College, I think he's going to be a guy that possibly gets a start at left guard, maybe displacing Graham Glasgow. So that's probably the biggest change offensively.
What do you think all of these changes potentially mean for Jared Goff? A lot was made of Ben Johnson and his fingerprints all over that offense. You now lose that. He stays in the division, but he's no longer with the Detroit Lions. What do you think all of these changes mean for Jared Goff? Do you think he can keep up a very high level of play without having Ben Johnson in town?
I do, and here I'll give you two reasons why. First of all, the weapons are all the same. Jahmyr Gibbs, David Montgomery, they're going to be in the backfield, right standing right behind Jared Goff. Monroe St. Brown, J-Mo, Tim Patrick, all of those guys are going to remain the same. Sam LaPorta, Brock Wright, tight ends, all the same. And in large part, other than the differences I talked about in that offensive line, the biggest thing that remains the same for him is Frank Ragnow, an all-pro center, will be that center that he's going to be working with. Now, that's reason number one. The components are largely the same. Reason number two, it's yet to be determined, and I've always said I think this is – Dan Campbell's offense. Ben Johnson did a great job of calling things on Sundays, and you know the creativity. And both Ben and Dan have said that it was a staff effort to put together some of those trick plays, to put together the game plans. But I think this is Dan Campbell's offense. Ben was calling it. Now John Morton's going to be calling it. So I think knowing that the offense isn't going to change a lot, there'll be some new wrinkles. There's always changes year to year. But that's going to remain the same, which is going to help Jared Goff be comfortable in this offense, be comfortable with his weapons, and still be explosive.
Right now, we're learning more about the Detroit Lions with John Jansen of 97.1 The Ticket in Detroit. We were having this conversation a week or so ago. I think the top four quarterbacks in the NFL are locked in. We can disagree on the order potentially, but Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, those are the four best quarterbacks in the league to me. And we were debating who gets that fifth spot, who's the fifth best quarterback. I think the answer is Jared Goff. Do you have Jared Goff as a top five quarterback in the league?
I do, and I've taken some heat for saying that here. I don't know who you bump out of that top four. At times during the year last year, as we update our rankings and do that whole thing during the regular season, there were times where I had him at four. And I think he is a top five quarterback. Now, the thing that separates him being at five and not being one of those top four guys can go out there and win with just about anybody. We saw Buffalo and their offense get depleted. Still, Josh Allen goes out there, wins an MVP. Lamar Jackson and all the guys that you talked about, even Joe Burrow. I know he's got great weapons, but he's a guy that just simply goes out there and wins. Jared Goff, and I would throw some other guys into that same category where, yeah, they're good, but they need weapons around them. They need high-level players around them, and they've golf-proofed this offense. You look at Jalen Hurts, and he's a guy that I think fits into that second tier of quarterback. If that's where, you know, you're starting with number five at Goff and, you know, Jalen Hurts and those type of guys, they need to have playmakers around them. And once they do, they can distribute the ball. They can make great decisions, and that's where I think Jared Goff is really separates himself from a lot of other quarterbacks is the mental process that he goes through. He knows the game so well. He knows the offense. He knows his teammates, and he gets the most out of every ounce of ability that he has.
John, let's talk about the division very quickly. I don't know who's going to win that division. You would have to assume that Detroit is going to be the favorite. Green Bay is certainly going to be in the mix as a playoff team. Minnesota, there's uncertainty about their quarterback position. Maybe it's Aaron Rodgers ends up being the quarterback for them. But right now we're looking at J.J. McCarthy, and I think you and I can agree the Bears are going to be a very popular wild card sleeper team in the NFC. How do you handicap what appears to be the toughest, most competitive division in football?
Well, Minnesota basically having a fresher, you know, a rookie quarterback. I call him a freshman because I've worked with them at Michigan as well. And J.J. will be fine. Kevin O'Connell is going to do, I think, a wonderful job. We saw what he did with Sam Darnold. And they've beefed up that offensive line. They've got a running game. They've got a great cast of wide receivers. And Brian Flores on defense is you know, one of the top defensive coordinators in the league. So they're still going to be tough and a force to be reckoned with. Green Bay, it kind of goes as Jordan Love goes. And, you know, we were talking about ranking the quarterbacks. I think he's that tier down from where Goff and Jalen Hurts and some of those older quarterbacks are, just because he hasn't been consistent enough. They go out in the first round, they draft a wide receiver, give him another weapon. They're always going to be a tough out. And then the Bears, it's really the big question mark. Are they going to be the team that goes worst to first? I don't see it in this division, but they could certainly be a wild card in regards to kind of doing the same thing. They've beefed up that offensive line. Ben Johnson's followed the blueprint that he learned in Detroit. Beef up the offensive line, continue to strengthen the defense, and then try and establish a run game. So he went out in the draft and got a tight end, very similar to Sam Laporta that he had here in Detroit. So there's no question it's going to be tough, but you know, I think there's – you could argue it's one of the top two or three divisions in regards to coaches, and that's with a huge question mark on Ben Johnson. What's he going to be as a head coach?
Last thing here, the over-under in Vegas right now for Lions wins is 10.5. Are you taking the over or the under this year in Detroit?
No, I'm taking the over. I know it's a tough start, and it's, you know, a first-place schedule. They've got a lot of work to do, and you look at the entire season, and it's on the road to Baltimore in week 3. They start off on the road in Green Bay, and then it's, you know, Cincinnati and Kansas City both on the road in weeks 5 and 6. So it starts off really tough, and then at the back half of the season, they've got the Giants, they've got Dallas, Pittsburgh, Minnesota, Chicago. So it kind of is a, you know, once you get to that midpoint, you start to run downhill a little bit, but I'll take the over in that every single day.
That is John Jansen joining us on the show today with 97.1 The Ticket and Detroit. The Lions are certainly going to be one of the more fun teams again this season. Really excited to see them come back to Arrowhead. You know, the last time, John, you guys were here, you didn't get Travis Kelce, you didn't get Chris Jones. I'm hoping that we get to see everybody on both sides and see these two teams match up against each other.
Don't give me the Mike Tirico asterisk comment. Come on, man. Jared Goff has never lost to Patrick Mahomes. And so maybe this is the first time Patrick Mahomes gets over that hump. I know he's, trust me, I say it somewhat jokingly, but it's going to be a great matchup. I know, I love what Kansas City has done. Health makes a big difference with Rashee Rice. Health makes a difference for Detroit with Aiden Hutchinson being healthy. So it's going to be a heavyweight bout.
That is John Jansen joining us on the show today. John, great stuff, man. Look forward to catching up with you later in the season.
Hey, great talking to you. Thanks for having me.
If you take a look at the early season schedule for the Chiefs, they play on Brazil on a Friday, a 3:25 game that's going to be nationally televised. Sunday night football, another 3:25 game. Monday night football, Sunday night football. Coming up on the other side, we'll get to the first noon game of the year for the Kansas City Chiefs on October 19th at Arrowhead. They got a noon game against the Las Vegas Raiders. That's coming up. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Royals baseball. 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Welcome back into the show. Coming up in just a bit, we're going to be joined by Scott Goldbranson, who covers the Raiders. We are about halfway done going through the Chiefs' schedule. We are at week 7 Week 7, Sunday, October 19th, the Kansas City Chiefs host the Las Vegas Raiders. That is their first scheduled noon game of the season. Rob, there has been a theme that I have noticed across this, and I'm guessing that Scott Goldbranson is going to have a very similar thing. It's hope. We know how the NFL works. If you write down six teams that you think are going to be good and six teams that you are 100% certain are going to be bad this season, you're going to be wrong on both sides. There's going to be a Washington Commanders team that comes out of nowhere and makes a run. There's also going to be a San Francisco 49ers team that makes the Super Bowl one year that misses it the next year. A Cincinnati Bengals team that people think is going to be good and then misses the playoffs in back-to-back seasons. Right now, the theme is hope. Now, it's all varying degrees of hope, right? The Chargers think they could win the division this year, think that they could maybe push towards being one of those top teams in the AFC. The Giants are thinking, well, we're not going to win the division, but I think we could be a 7-8 win team, keep our head coach. We got a young quarterback and build on that. The theme of May and June is one of hope and optimism. Hey, we think we're going to be either exactly what people expect us to be, we're going to take a step forward next year, or we are going to surprise people and we're going to be the Commanders. We're going to be the team that comes out of nowhere and makes the postseason. That's the tone that I've picked up on our first six guests of the day.
I mean, that's what happens in May. Optimism runs supreme. I would say that it's, as the NFL calendar works, it's the draft. Everyone's excited they're about their own draft. Even if the draft grade comes out, you still believe your own guys. The schedule, oh, I think these are all wins. Let's get excited. You think you can be better than the, you know, prognosticators think. And then at training camp, the minute you see guys, even in shorts and t-shirts, hit a practice field, people get way more excited about their team than they are. I think that's what's fun about sports. It's the optimism. It's the excitement. It's the building before you see the results.
So let's head to the phone lines right now and continue our journey. The first noon game of the year is the Chiefs taking a getting a visit from the Las Vegas Raiders. We'll head to the phone lines right now and be joined by Scott Goldbranson, who is the host of Silver and Black Today, to learn more about the Raiders. Scott, always happy to have you join us on the show. I'm assuming that optimism is very high right now for Vegas. You got a new coach. You got a new quarterback. Tom Brady is in the mix. This is very much a new look Las Vegas Raiders.
Yeah, it is. And they really targeted, I think, key areas of need in the draft. Of course, you can't do everything in one draft, at least most teams can't. But the Raiders addressed so many of those needs walking away. I think for Raider Nation, and even for a lot of us who cover the Raiders nationally, it's very difficult because it's like, wait, this has been a dysfunctional organization for so long. To see things actually go according to what you would think would be an adult-related plan is a good thing, and it's got fans a lot excited, and I think it's got a lot of people in the NFL realizing that Pete Carroll and John Spytek as the new GM, that combination, along with, as you mentioned, Tom Brady, is really starting to perhaps finally change the trajectory of the franchise.
Scott, are you happy with the head coaching decision from the Las Vegas Raiders? I think it was well known in a lot of circles that the Raiders wanted Ben Johnson, who ultimately took the Bears' job, to be the head coach. That's not how it played itself out. And they got a coach in Pete Carroll who certainly has a great resume, but is a little bit older. You don't think this is a long-term plan. Are you happy with the way that the head coaching situation worked out for the Raiders?
I am, and I think it actually was the best plan B that they had, because once Ben Johnson was clearly going to go to Chicago and people understood why, including the fact that he has a young quarterback there in Caleb Williams, I think what this organization needed was not only a culture change, but somebody who had been there before, somebody who could come in with the gravitas in the AFC West, as you know, being in Kansas City, having Andy Reid, having Sean Payton, and having Jim Harbaugh in the division, having that veteran coach come in and kind of reset it and say, okay, you know what, we're going to get this thing on the right track for two or three years or whatever Pete's going to handle and be able to do. And I think that was a good move. And I think if they weren't able to get the hottest commodity in young coaches, going to a guy like Pete Carroll was the right move. And I think it will finally stabilize the situation in Las Vegas.
So, Scott, if I asked you to rank the coaches in the AFC West, number one, you would put Andy Reid. I think he's earned to be at the top of that list. Who would you put at four? Because it is a really, really strong argument. You can put, to me, any of those other three coaches at two. You also could argue to put any of those other three coaches at four as well.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about everybody except Harbaugh has won a Super Bowl, and Harbaugh's been to the Super Bowl as a coach, and we know his history of turning franchises around. And look, what the Chargers have done this offseason, I'm sure you'll talk to somebody about that, or if you haven't already, and they're going to be tough, too. It's hard, and I think that's why the Pete Carroll hire made a lot of sense because, yeah, bringing a young coach in to that division, even Ben Johnson, who I think will be successful in the NFL, would have been tough. And so that, I think, was a great point of vision for Tom Brady, for Mark Davis, as they went out and decided after Ben Johnson, who could we get as coach? But yeah, I mean, you could draw it up, and I don't know who you put at 3 or 4 or 2. I mean, depending on what happens this year, I guess that'll answer the question for us a little bit.
Right now, we're talking to Scott Goldbranson, who covers the Raiders for Silver and Black Today, learning more about the AFC West rival for Kansas City in the Las Vegas Raiders. A lot of people say you should never take a running back in round one of the NFL draft. You guys just didn't draft a running back in round one. You selected one in the top 10 in Ashton Jeanty. What do you make of that decision? And what is the hope and optimism and excitement around one of the more exciting players in college football last season?
Well, again, I think if you look at it, and convention says, yeah, don't take a running back up there. But I'll tell you what, you look at Ashton Jeanty, and you're talking about a generational running back, most people believe. He led FBS in rushing with 2,600 yards, 29 touchdowns, and he forced missed tackles 152 times. So his ability to do that and to gain yards after contact, really, it was a great running back class, as you know, Carrington, in this draft. So a lot of people were like, well, wait till the second round or wait till the third round. But there was a great running back class, and then there was Ashton Jeanty. By the way, the Raiders were next to last in the NFL last year in rushing. A lot of people blame that on the offensive line. And while they did have some culpability there, the reality is they haven't had a running back since they decided to say goodbye to Josh Jacobs. So I think Jeanty does that. Jeanty also brings with him the type of attitude, energy, and I think cultural fit that Pete Carroll and Tom Brady really wanted. So getting him there, people finally came around to it, and the excitement is off the charts for Ashton Jeanty being another one of the faces of this franchise moving forward.
Scott, maybe I shouldn't say this being based in Kansas City, but I think that Brock Bowers is now the best tight end in the National Football League. Do you guys have anybody else in the pass game that teams should be worried about?
Well, I tell you what, he had some personal issues and missed a lot of the season last year. But you have the other tight end, Michael Mayer. Remember, he came out of Notre Dame in the second round just a couple years ago. He's a pass-catching maniac. The Raiders last year didn't have the offensive play caller to really take advantage of two tight end sets. So you can see that this year. Then you add in Jacoby Myers. Is Jacoby Myers a true number one? No, but he's a very good number two. And then you look at the kid they drafted out of TCU, and I'm telling you right now, Carrington, watch Jack Besh, who came out of TCU, as I mentioned. He's a physical, competitive wide receiver, 1,000 yards last year. He's savvy route runner. He's a willing blocker, and he's ideal for Chip Kelly's scheme. So I think you put Geno Smith, the cool, calm, collected guy, back there with those tools and a top running back. And I think this Raiders offense is finally going to start clicking and score some points. So, yeah, everybody around the AFC West, everybody around the AFC, I think is going to see a lot out of Brock Bowers and the supporting cast there in Las Vegas.
Scott, I'm looking at the over-under right now for the Las Vegas Raiders. It is at 6.5. What is the expectation this year with the Raiders? It can't be to win the division, but is it to be a wild card team? Is the expectation to be what the Broncos were last season and maybe be a team that could sneak in and grab a wild card spot? What is the expectation this year in Vegas?
Yeah, I think with fans, the expectation is they're going to win 10 games and go to the Super Bowl. But obviously, realism takes control. And I think the 6.5 number is actually realistic. I, early on, with the schedule coming out from the NFL when it came out, I picked them at 7 wins. I think that's the floor. I think the ceiling could be 9 or maybe 10 if everything went right, Carrington, and this defense, which lacks linebacking talent, overperforms and the offensive line grows. DJ Glaze at right tackle ends up being the guy that they think he can be. Then, yeah, maybe they could do that. But I think overall the expectation is that this team improves by 3 or 4 games, so that puts them at about 7 or 8 wins in a division that got better, in a division where the Chargers and the Chiefs probably going to face off for the title of the AFC West, and then the Broncos there too. We'll see how they do.
And that was Scott Goldbranson joining us on the show today with Silver and Black Today. one of the teams in the AFC West with the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll see if the Raiders can turn things around and start improving. Scott, great stuff as always, man. Look forward to catching up with you down the line.
Sounds good, Carrington. Take care of yourself.
Absolutely. That is Scott Goldbranson, who covers the Raiders. Coming up on the other side, we are about halfway done. We are going to every city that plays the Chiefs this year. Week 8, Monday, October 27th, the Chiefs host the Washington Commanders on Monday Night Football. We'll head to the nation's capital next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.